You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The movement against drunk driving started in California 4 decades ago. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or MAD, was founded in 1980 by a Sacramento mother, Candace Leitner, after her 13-year-old daughter was killed by a drunk driver while walking to a carnival. And for a time, the state cracked down on DUIs, setting new laws and increasing penalties. But today, those efforts are breaking down with drastic consequences. Deadly alcohol-related crashes are on the rise, and repeat offenders continue getting behind the wheel. So why is this happening, and what could be done to change it? Robert Lewis is an investigative reporter with the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters, which partners with public media stations across the state. And he joins us now with the latest installment in the series, License to Kill. Welcome back, Robert.
Thanks so much for having me, Vicky.
So you have joined us earlier this year, about twice already, about this investigative series, License to Kill. Remind us how you got started and what sparked this investigated series.
Well, I think like a lot of people, I was pretty disturbed to see the rising numbers of deaths on our road, our roadways, particularly through the during the pandemic, and wanted to understand a little bit more about what, not only why that might be happening, but were there things we as a state could be doing to sort of save lives? And so what we ended up doing was basically creating a database of vehicular manslaughter and homicide cases filed across the state from 2019 through early 2024, and spent months really going all throughout the state, pulling the court case files, creating our own database, and trying to look at the circumstances that that led up to these horrible tragedies. The first piece really focused a lot on the DMV and the degree to which they give the licenses back to individuals who have these really stunning records on the road before they kill and even after they kill. The second piece showed how the courts are often failing to notify the DMV when there's a manslaughter conviction. And so as a result, some of these people are able to stay on the road. And this latest piece, we really wanted to look very specifically at drunk and drug driving, which is, like a third of the roadway deaths are attributable to DUI. So it's a major issue, and it was something we really wanted to understand.
In terms of the data that you were able to get and sift through and distill and make sense of, has there been a comprehensive look like this before in the state?
No, I mean, we do put out as a state reports. The DMV puts out reports every year looking at DUIs. But there, to my knowledge, there's never been this type of analysis of the actual drivers themselves, the pattern of behavior that has led up to these fatal crashes, and what happens to them after. I think it's difficult in part, we don't have a centralized court case management system. So really, there's no way to do this other than old shoe leather reporting, which is going to the courthouses, pulling the files, and really trying to understand what happened.
I touched upon briefly in the intro about how MAD got started in California, Sacramento, at that, in the community of Fair Oaks. But can you talk a little bit more about how this state was like the vanguard in the fight against drunk driving starting in the 80s?
Yeah, the death of Candace Leitner's daughter in 1980 it led to the creation of MAD. She was one of the key founders of it. Here we passed some of the first arguably toughest laws in the country as it pertains to DUIs. Jerry Brown, his first go around, touted them as the toughest package of laws. I think in 1982 we had a special task force that looked into this. So anyways, we were very much a leader, and we did cut DUI deaths by half. But what you see over time is, and particularly most troubling in recent years, is not only did progress sort of stall and plateau, but it's actually reversed. DUI deaths in California, according to federal estimates, are up more than 50% over the past decade, which is a rate twice as great as the rest of the country. So everyone's seen increases in roadway deaths, including DUIs, but we have had a greater increase than other states.
Okay, how did you make sense of when and why things started to go backwards after making progress?
Well, making a causal connection on roadway deaths is difficult, if not impossible. We talked to a lot of researchers who, you know, throw a lot of possibilities out there as for why this might be the case. We really wanted to focus on the enforcement system and try to understand the role that our enforcement system and the holes in the enforcement system might be playing. And one of the things we found is that, you know, many of our laws, our enforcement laws, are actually much weaker than other parts of the country. Just to give you a couple small examples, you know, here it takes 3 DUIs in 10 years before the fourth can be charged as a felony. And in other states, it can be as few as 2. You know, here you lose your license for 3 years after your 3rd DUI. You know, there are some states where it's 8, 15, Connecticut, it's a permanent revocation. So we give you your license back more quickly. Here, you know, when even if we do take your license and you get caught driving on a suspended license, driving on a revoked license, we often do very little to you. So we found all of these holes, it would appear, or weaknesses in the system that allow people to stay on the road and continue driving time and time and time again until the worst eventually happens.
Is one reason because California maybe doesn't have great public transportation and getting around is tied to economic stability? I mean, you got to get to a job or get to a medical appointment. I mean, is that one reason why? I mean, it's really hard to understand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that has been put up there as a reason or a suggestion throughout this entire project, right? Like, there is a real and legitimate fear of the unintended consequence. I mean, as you pointed out, taking someone's license is not a small decision. It's not just going to affect their life. It's going to affect their kids' life. It's going to affect, you know, every part of their family for medical decisions, school decisions. So taking someone's license is a really, really big deal. But to counter that, I mean, you talk to the victims' families in these cases, and it's sort of like, well, but what about my loved one who was just killed, right? Like you were really worried about this person who has demonstrated time and again a willingness to act in a manner on the roadway that's going to endanger lives. You didn't do anything, and sure enough, the inevitable happened. I mean, so many of these cases read like tragedy foretold. I mean, you look at them and you say, well, of course this is how it's going to end, because this person got a DUI and a DUI and a DUI, and they were driving on a suspended license and they were speeding, and then eventually they killed somebody.
Yeah, I mean, your reporting found that, you know, some people have, you know, 4 or 5, even up to like more than a dozen DUIs. But then there's also others who they have one, no one gets hurt. That's it. You know, it was a big learning lesson for them. So what is the likelihood that someone who gets a DUI repeats it again?
So there is actually some interesting state data on that. There was a study, I think it was looking at people who got arrested in 2005. And it showed that a quarter of them, I think it was around a quarter, got another DUI in the next 15 years. And perhaps even more interesting, if of the people who got arrested in 2005 for whom it was their 3rd or more DUI, they got another one. 40% got yet another one in the next 15 years. So what you see is not only is there a pretty sizable amount of individuals who get repeat DUIs, the higher up you go, the greater the likelihood increases that you're just going to keep getting them. So in effect, if you have 3 DUIs in California, there's a really good chance you're going to get a 4th. So recidivism is a huge issue in this state.
Yeah, I mean, some people might be shocked to learn that you can continue getting DUIs at that scale. It seems like from your reporting and looking at these laws, is there something built into these laws where there could be better in differentiating, I guess, like chronic DUI offenders from maybe like these isolated cases among some drivers?
Yeah, I mean, that was a feeling I think we got reading through these cases, looking through the data, is that, you know, we don't often differentiate between the people who make a one-time mistake and are probably never going to do it again, and the individuals who just show a willingness or inability not to risk all of our lives continuously. You know, to give an example, there was this individual, Sylvester Conway, who had two DUIs on his record. When he got arrested for a DUI, I believe it was 2019 in Fresno County, you know, got held in jail for, I think it was 3 days, released, had a court date. He just skipped court. He just didn't show up. They issue a warrant for his arrest. While he's out, he gets another DUI arrest. They cite him again. He's not held in the jail. They give him a court date. He skips his court date. So now he's got two warrants. They arrest him again for a DUI. Again, he skips court. They give him another warrant. He had three outstanding DUI cases, three outstanding warrants when he drove drunk and or allegedly drove drunk, flipped his car and killed his passenger. He's now facing murder charges. So, you know, it's being handled very seriously, but you can't help but wonder what would have happened had there been more urgency earlier in the process. Would the tragedy have been prevented?
I mean, you mentioned that there isn't a central court system. So when it came to your reporting as an investigative reporter, it was really like boots on the ground, going to all 58 counties to get a comprehensive look. But does that also, I guess, impact if someone has a DUI in one county versus another county? I mean, do counties talk to each other? I mean, how do you get a good look at someone's record, or I guess how does that work?
It's a great question. I mean, and it is actually a very serious problem. You know, you'd sometimes see in the court filings, even a prosecutor would write, this person had at least, you know, two DUIs, three DUIs, because in reality, they often don't know. You know, they're relying on DMV records, which are often incomplete because the courts will sometimes fail to report things to the DMV. Things fall off your DMV record after a time. You know, sometimes there's variations in the name. And so, you know, you might not realize somebody had a DUI or a case somewhere else. So it is a serious issue, you know, for the authorities to be able to, with any level of certainty, say what someone's true and full record was when it comes to these types of cases. There is a centralized law enforcement sort of database computerized system, however, in which, in theory, an officer in the field is able to log into, and they're able to see what someone's DMV record is and what someone's prior history is.
When you talk to the DMV or other public officials about this, I mean, how do they respond to your findings?
Yeah, I mean, the DMV has not had a whole lot to say, frankly. You know, they provided a statement basically saying lawmakers make the law and we follow the law. You know, when I talked to law enforcement, you know, nobody really refuted anything we had to say. You know, I think on the contrary, I mean, certainly a lot of the prosecutors are pretty frustrated. A lot of the law enforcement officers we talked to are pretty frustrated. We were actually amazed. We interviewed a defense attorney who represented a woman who in her 16th DUI. And you know, he pushed for her to not get time behind bars, for her to just get probation. And he actually told my co-reporter, acknowledged, he said, you know, we don't have serious sanctions for repeat DUI offenders in this state, and, you know, we should. It really seems like a lot of people who are up front and close with the system do feel like it's broken.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with CalMatters investigative reporter Robert Lewis about how California's DUI laws are failing to prevent repeat offenders from continuing to drive. Okay, so lawmakers make the laws, right? That was the response, you know, more or less from the DMV. Are lawmakers aware of this? Is there an appetite at the state capitol to maybe improve the state laws that are currently on the books?
You know, to date, there really hasn't been. You know, I'll give you one small example. We are one of the few states, I think we're one of, you know, maybe 14, 15 states in the country that do not require those in-car breathalyzers
the ignition interlock devices.
Exactly. IIDs. We're one of the only, one of the few states that don't require those for first-time DUI offenders. And there have been lawmakers that have been, for years, been trying to get that passed. There was a bill this year to do that. It would have made us, you know, in line with the rest of the country, and it got gutted. It got taken out. So, you know, to date, lawmakers have not done a whole lot in recent years to look at and to address, death on the road and in particular, drunk and drug driving. So
essentially those like breathalyzers, you have to breathe into it for your car to actually start and for you to be able to drive, right?
Yeah, I mean, research shows that while they are installed, they can and do reduce instances of recidivism. So basically, it cuts down on instances of drunk driving. They're not perfect. Every researcher we talked to sort of said they weren't perfect, but every researcher we talked to also said they're better than nothing. And, you know, when you're dealing with an imperfect system, you need to be trying everything you can to try to save lives. And I think the CDC, their data says something like, 70%, it cuts down on drunk driving incidents by 70% while they're actually installed. So the data is a bit mixed, but it does show pretty consistently that they do have an impact, and we don't require them.
Okay, so it's not a requirement, but can't a judge order someone to put one in their car?
Right. So The law as it stands is judges are supposed to be ordering them for repeat drunk drivers, right? Like, so we don't do it for first-time drunk drivers, but they're supposed to be ordering it for repeat drunk drivers. However, very often judges are not doing it. The DMV's own data shows that there's something in the order of a dozen counties where judges order it fewer than 10% of the cases in which someone was convicted of a repeat DUI. I think the entire state figure is basically in two out of three cases where a repeat DUI offender is convicted, the judges are not ordering it. So something is breaking down. The law does not appear to be being followed. And my co-reporter, Lauren Hepler, interviewed the lawmaker who passed the bill that originally required this, State Senator Jerry Hill, and he was outraged that the judges would not be ordering it because that was the intent of the bill.
Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about has devastating and irreparable consequences. You know, it claims people's lives. Is there also maybe a cultural component to like drinking and driving? And I don't know, when you talk to people about, I mean, it's been around for a long time. And now learning from your investigation, I mean, it seems to be increasing.
So I actually interviewed a couple of the drivers who were convicted of intoxicated vehicular manslaughter. And in particular, these were two young men. And they talked about exactly what you're talking about, where, one of them was, going to celebrate his cousin's birthday, doing shots of tequila, did a little bit of ecstasy. And he said, he's like, doctors get DUIs, lawyers get DUIs, like everybody gets DUIs. Like you don't really take it seriously until the worst happens. And you never think it's going to happen to you. And I saw that in a number of these cases where people just make these dumb mistakes. And there is, of course, like a bad luck component to it. And then they ruin their own lives too. I mean, one of these horrific cases I looked at, this guy who just had this horrible pattern of behavior on the road. He had two prior DUIs. He sped. He smashed into the back of a car, which burst into flames. Burning the victim, whose body was later found inside. And police, let him call his mom, and they overheard him saying, "I'm sorry, mom. My life is over. Please tell my kids I love them." There is an interesting component of this where it's sort of protecting people from themselves too, because these individuals have also ruined their own lives.
Robert, thank you so much. Is there going to be a part four?
Yes, more to come.
And then you'll be back on Insight. Robert Lewis is an investigative reporter with the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters. And we've been talking about the latest in the series, License to Kill, looking at how California's DUI laws are failing to prevent repeat offenders from getting back behind the wheel, leading to increases in deadly alcohol-related collisions. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.